Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gigax, and I'm not going to waste a bunch of time in the front talking about our next guest because you just listened to, maybe it was yesterday, the day before, an episode came out where I read the entire Mike Cariff platform for president. By the way, Mike, as we record this, I know it hasn't been released yet, but it took me about an hour to read that whole thing from cover to cover, and it's good work. You did a good job with it. So my listeners will have already heard that, and they heard some of my thoughts as I read through it. Now it's time to talk to you about it. So first, welcome to Classes of Male.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I'm out here in D.C. We had some meetings, so I'm in a hotel room, just so you...
Right.
Well, actually, people can't see this, right?
No, they can't. This is audio only.
Okay, it's just audio. Yeah, audio so, only. Okay, well, but it don't matter where I'm at then.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so actually, let's talk about that for just a sec. Are you there in your capacity as a member of the executive council?
Yeah.
Okay.
We had some meetings, and we're going to be having a lot of meetings leading up to contract negotiations next year.
Oh, good. Yeah, hopefully Renfro is a little more interested in input this go-around than he was last time.
We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, how is that? I mean, you know, when he came to a rap session here in Las Vegas, he was open about, I'm going it alone, and I'm you know, I'm the guy, I'm the negotiator, and this is going to be on my shoulders. And clearly it was a disaster. Has that attitude changed as far as you can tell?
You know, when you say clearly it was a disaster, I'm with you 100%.
Right.
I don't think it could have gone any worse. If you look at what we were trying to accomplish and what we did accomplish, you know, there's a huge chasm in between those two things. But how does he see it as the president of the union? You know, I don't think he sees it that way, but we kind of gotta ask him a little bit more, probably.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so for the sake of my listeners and to keep things more interesting, there was really only one section of your platform that I took issue with, and so I want to talk about that first, and then the rest of it will be like a love fest and we'll mutual complaining. But the first thing is the part that's closest to my heart, the part that I'm most care about, and that is training. And you know, as I'm leading up to it in reading that episode yesterday, I said, oh, I wonder if he's going to have anything about rank and file carriers or if it's just going to be about training stewards. And I was disappointed to see it's just about training stewards, that there's no mention in here at all that our rank and file carriers also need better service. You do talk a little bit about the Carrier Academy in the ADR process, the alternative dispute resolution, and we'll talk about that later. But Mike, what are your plans, or do you have them, to also educate rank and file carriers?
Well, first of all, let me see, I'll take that. I like that you brought that up because I think that is a hole in the platform. So just for everyone that's listening, this is a fluid document. We first put it out last year when I first announced I was running for president. The date on this one that's posted on the website, which is Caref for Prez, C-A-R-E-F, the number 4, P-R-E-Z, bunch of tabs there. Just go to the platform. This one is dated, I believe, May 27th.
Correct.
Of this year. Yeah. So, and I'm already looking at a couple of things. One thing I want to flush out a little bit more is the, you know, what is the plan for the future of the Postal Service, particularly with package volume, particularly small parcels. To me, small parcels are replacing what would have been back in the 80s and the 90s, where every home business in America got an average of 5 letters a day or something. You know, very soon we're going to be getting 5 parcels, small parcels a day. And are those going to come from a private company that doesn't have the universal service obligation that can raise the rates and all that? Or is the United States Postal Service going to be what it should be, which is the delivery mechanism for all of America, and we require some type of change in the law? You know, there's got to be some type of offset. Right now you have universal service obligation versus first-class mail monopoly.
Right.
And so the Postal Service brings in revenue based on a monopoly. They have an added expense based on universal service. So now that the first class mail is, you know, you have a monopoly, but so what? Because that volume is declining. That volume is not as high as it once was. And in the future, it's probably going to go down even more. But can we get some type of monopoly on Spurs? Can we get a requirement that there'll be a mailbox that, you know, every American has that we can deliver the Spurs to, just like you have a mailbox now for letters and that kind of thing? So maybe there's some answers there going forward, some things we can kind of flush out a little bit. I think it's our obligation. Don't leave it up to the Postal Service to come up with the solution.
So
you know?
There are similar problems with, or there are similar solutions with European carriers where they utilize the fact that they have mailboxes everywhere, and particularly cluster boxes and parcel lockers, and they've developed what are called carrier agnostic parcel lockers, where the Postal Service puts out the parcel lockers, and then the parcel companies like Amazon or DHL, probably mostly there, rents that space from the National Postal Service. And that seems like a great idea because it trades on the fact that we have these secure locations everywhere. But Mike, none of that has to do with educating rank and file carriers.
I'm going to get to it. I just want to throw out there. The second thing I want to throw out there was the uniform program. What is the answer to the debacle with the uniforms now? There's a couple of things that are kind of rolling around in my head. And as I go around the country, I hear from people and I get feedback. So leading up to what you're bringing up, I like that. And so it's not something that we don't do. So as you probably know, the business agent in every region is generally responsible for training and education. It used to be the responsibility of the state associations, but now the state associations get their dues money and they focus on
just political
legislative
action,
legislation and politics. And so it falls back on the regional offices, handle the grievances, do the organizing, and do the training. That's our main function. And we do that in conjunction with the branches. And I just want to say, we do a lot of training for your general member, your rank and file average letter carrier in Region 3. It's not like we don't do it. So
that's why
I would
asking,
like to add that. I would like to add that aspect into the platform. When I say we, the NALC, we're working on putting out some like tutorial type videos. As I mentioned in the platform, and you know, you probably have, you know, you probably agree with this, being an academy instructor, it's really hard to do the training over Zoom in the same way for it to be effective, or to do tutorials and things like that and for it to be effective, because people learn best when you're engaging with them, when they're participating, when they're utilizing all of their senses. They're not just looking at something where, you know, it's just not the best way that people learn. So how do you do that in a way where you have group settings? So for example, if you got a route count and inspection coming up, generally the union local branch or somebody will do some type of route training, right? And they'll go out to that office or that branch and they'll meet up at a library or whatever, at the post office after work, and they'll go over, here's how you fill out the 1838 and here's the things to look for and here's how they're going to try to cheat you and, you know, those kind of things. So, and those are available to all the members. We have a state convention every year, the Illinois State Association of Letter Carriers. At that convention, we always provide those kind of trainings for everybody. All of the delegates, anyone that's coming there, you don't have to be a steward. We always make it available to the people in that city. If the convention is in, you know, Springfield, Illinois, the carriers in Springfield can come to the training. Anyone can come to the training, make it available. But I think a lot of that stuff would have to be online just so it'd be available to everybody.
Exactly.
It's going to be hard to do something like that in like 100 locations around the country. But what can we do with that online to make it more effective? One of the things you could do is like Q&As and stuff like that, where you're on a particular topic. So let's say you record a training tutorial on a particular topic, and then you say, okay, on Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to roll it, and then afterwards we're going to take questions on this topic for a live audience, you know, via whatever format. And that's a way that someone doesn't have to be there at that time. They can go look at the video at any time, whenever it's convenient for them. But if they want to engage on that topic and kind of get a deeper understanding, ask some questions, they'll have that opportunity. So that's one idea. What ideas do you have?
And obviously it's a lot easier for a person to attend that virtual meeting rather than, you know, actually get to Springfield, for example. So for me,
and I think not to cut you off, but I think that when you talk about your union representatives, when we put on training, and I don't think my region is any different than anyone else, you put on training and you kind of focus normally on the branch's union stewards, the branch's officers. Why? Because the branch is going to pay out of their funds to send those people to that training. Is the branch going to pay money to send average Joe letter carrier just to get some additional
knowledge? No, they are not.
Probably not. I mean, if they have extra money, that's great. But so those type of things, I think we would have to make them available so that they would be free, you know, and so that a person could get the training wherever they're at without having to travel and take off work and all that.
Right. And so the nice thing about that, you know, as a Carrier Academy instructor, obviously it's much more effective, much easier to teach in person. You get that interaction. You can do hands-on things. And then recently I tried to recreate the Carrier Academy on the podcast in just audio, and it fell woefully short. Yeah. But I will say that oftentimes it's not a choice between having an in-person class versus an online class. It's a choice between having an online class or having no class at all.
Having nothing at all, exactly. Yeah.
And that's where we can put this energy into the online class. And then on top of that, you know, and you've already kind of mentioned this, is if we do that sort of online or virtual class or meeting, it's there forever. And anybody who wants to access that, now we have this permanent resource that carriers and stewards alike have access to.
Yep.
Yeah, so
yeah, to me... And you don't have to update some of those things as the contractual language changes or the circumstances change. Just like... We should be updating the Carrier Academy.
Oh, it's an embarrassment. Materials. Yes.
Not to pick a bone with the Carrier Academy.
No, it's 100%. Come on, man. It's embarrassing. Yeah. And we have that agreement. The agreement that it created the Carrier Academy says like every 6 months or every year that the material will be updated to reflect changes. I don't think it's been updated since the Academy was created.
Yeah, what year was that? It's like 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's been a good 10 years now. Yeah. And it still has like the old brick scanner. It has MSPs. It has a lot of stuff that it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yep. Go ahead.
I go to a lot of Carrier Academies and I see how the facilitators, what do you call them?
Facilitators. Yep.
How the facilitators run the class. And the good ones, it's very participatory, you know. Even the Postal Service has that training, that facilitator workshop training, which is not bad, you know, and it kind of teaches you different techniques and things like that. But, you know, if you're just like lecturing the class or sitting up there reading to them,
it's just
not going to be that effective. But if you get them up, you get them moving around, you play little games, you know, do different things, the training is just much more effective.
Yeah, no question about it. And that's where... You know, if we supplement that with an online training, that interactive, which I know you mentioned in your platform, that we have to have this interactive aspect to it. And that's, you know, that might be a little bit above what I can do as a programmer or a PowerPoint creator. But I know we have great talented people that we can utilize to make that training available for rank and file carriers.
Yeah. And once you have the resources of the National Association of Letter Carriers, which is, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars at this point, you know, you may have to hire somebody. It's okay.
Right. Yeah. And the only thing missing, you know, we have carriers who have that kind of skill. We have carriers who have the programming skill to create that sort of thing. And obviously we have the money. So what's missing is the will to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like in your own platform, I see this in the union generally, the concern is put toward training stewards, and I get why that's important, you know, especially if you have limited training resources. Those are your frontline fighters. But people give lip service to, a trained and educated workforce makes everything easier all the way up and down the line. And so even though it's not in your platform now, I'm hearing from you that
it's going to be, man. I wrote it down.
All right. Good deal. Okay. That's good.
Get it in there.
All right. So
we're looking at doing an update. I don't want to promise a date, but
yeah, that's fine.
Probably within the next 30 days, there'll be another update.
Yeah, and I saw some updates in there that obviously happened after May. Like you mentioned the new postmaster in your platform. And so
must have been coming because the date, I don't think we've touched it since May 27th, but
maybe, but it definitely says,
I don't know when he was announced.
The new, I, It feels like it was only a couple weeks ago that the new Postmaster was announced.
Well, he started, July 12th or something like that, but
yeah,
it was announced at least a month ahead of time, maybe all even 2 months. So
yeah, fair enough.
I don't know.
Yeah, you're more plugged into that stuff than I am. So you may have known well before I knew who it was going to be. So what is your impression of the new Postmaster?
Have none so far. The opening statement was benign. It was nothing bad, nothing kind of good.
It wasn't hostile, at least.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't like whatever. they're having a big meetings out in San Diego this week. And this may be the Postal Service, labor relations reps, and top leadership. So this may be their kind of first opportunity to chart out their agenda. I don't know. Up until now, I've been surprised because I thought he would come out swinging. So I would say that's a good sign right away that he didn't come out swinging. But he also hasn't come out and said, hey, I got all these great ideas how we're going to do this. And, you know, we're going to start complying with the contract. We're going to organize the Postal Service so it works better. And we're going to go after new revenue and, you know, whatever. He hasn't done none of that either. So it's really just right at the starting point at this point, I guess.
Right. It's kind of a blank canvas now because he also has not said, at least that I've seen, that he intends to continue the Delivering for America plan.
Yeah, it was something I saw but it was benign. It was like, we'll look at it. We'll, you know, it wasn't a commitment one way or another, but I'm like on that end, they haven't stopped doing anything and they haven't accelerated doing anything. So,
right. So we just got two SNDCs that I know of here in Las Vegas. And, you know, you mentioned SNDCs in your platform and you say that the union has generally been silent on them. What's the story with SNDCs in Region 3? And how has that been handled?
Well, I don't know if we've been any different in Region 3. I think that, so we have a memorandum on the SNDCs, and what's, to me, what's lacking from the memorandum is when the Postal Service goes, because some of these SNDCs are not even bringing in any new carriers.
Yeah.
They're really just reformatting the facility. They bring in a small parcel machine. They set up electronic, you know, what do you call that? Charging stations for potentially electronic vehicles, or some of them already have electronic vehicles kind of thing. They give them brand new cases and they, you know, they all get the water fountains that you can refill.
I got to interrupt you for a sec because you mentioned the cases in your platform too as an example of something to post. What's the issue with the cases? Like, were there improvements that you had in mind that didn't get adopted or what?
Well, every post office I've been in, I look at the way the carriers handle the spurs. Or how they're handled in the post office in general. And it's different everywhere. And it's like everybody, and there's no problem with using your ingenuity, but it would seem that we should be able to figure out what's the best way of doing it and then set up the equipment to handle the modern flow of mail, which we know is an ever-increasing volume of spurs. So if we're going to put them in some type of order, I like to have some type of case, maybe like general separations, maybe like 15 separations where you can put the spurs in, something like that. Maybe you're going to put them in like buckets or something. You see people with APCs, with nutting trucks or whatever. They put them in tubs. Some people like to take them to the vehicle. That's fine if you know the route, but if you're not familiar with the route, taking the spurs to the vehicle is not a good idea at all.
Well, so, we got the load truck, but yeah, it's a lot harder out on the street.
1-6, and then it breaks the relays up.
Yeah,
and,
I hear you.
You know, I don't like it. So
that's
just one example.
Right.
Why give us brand new cases and give us the same exact case that we had 100 years ago when mail volume is completely different?
It's a great point, especially if you're just going to redo the same thing. The old cases weren't broken.
Exactly.
My case functions just fine. So getting another one that's exactly like it, you make a great point that we have these opportunities to make things better. Like possibly the shelves could have bigger spaces on them so that spurs for that loop could go into that space, you know, or something like that. Like back in the old days, they had like the horizontal flat casing where you'd put the flats for the whole street in like one big cell. And then when you pulled them out, you'd collate them. And there's room for improvement. And it feels like, and you mentioned this in your platform, that the union isn't consulted on these issues.
Or the carrier. So
right.
The union, I would look at, so I want to see the blueprints in the beginning. Where's that machine going to be located at? That machine is loud. And so they always say, oh, we're going to cut it off at 6:30. Yeah, sure you are. Because, you know, when you get the parcels in late, you're not cutting it off at 6:30. But, you know, if it's right next to somebody's case, is there a better way to lay out the facility? We have no input into the layout of the facility. A lot of times the bathrooms are out of service for like months on end. Okay, if that's your plan to have the bathrooms out of service, what type of setup are we going to have? You know, are you going to give us like outhouses, or they have like these trailer type bathrooms?
Yeah, where some of those are actually kind of nice. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so well, you know, we should have input into the planning stages of the buildings. And then I really believe, I mean, these are big facilities for the most part. Some of them have a lot of, I've been in facilities where there's not a lot of carrier routes. Mm-hmm. And in those facilities, why can't we spread out a little bit? You look at the rural carriers and they got three different pieces of equipment, four pieces of equipment, you know, whatever. It just should be a conversation, God forbid, with the regular carrier on what kind of equipment they would like, how they would like their cell sizes, you know, that kind of thing. And some type of discussion before they just come in and start banging away and, you know, changing everything around. That's what I would like to see, input from the carriers and from the union right at the beginning before it starts rolling out.
Right. I think that'd be more cooperative. Obviously, we need to have a stronger input. And this is the kind of thing that strong leadership, you know, Mike, I got to tell you, this feels like like I'm talking to somebody who actually carries mail every now and again and is still in touch. Yeah, exactly. Still in touch with the workroom floor. So I was talking to some of my fellow carriers about it, and obviously you're the only national officer who still carries mail every now and again. And
I will be the only member of the executive council that receives a back pay check next week.
That's awesome. Yeah, and people haven't, you know, you do lose touch. If you're not actively out there soliciting the thoughts of carriers, actually on the workroom floor, seeing what goes on, it's really easy to lose touch. And I really respect that about you. For people who don't do that, you know, there's still other ways to keep in touch, like to actually talk to CCAs, for example. I remember when I became a steward, just briefly, I was most interested in protecting the CCAs because they're obviously the ones that get shit on the most. They get their rights violated the most. And so they need the most protection. And
the weakest link.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so I went to my local union officers and I'm like, hey, I'm about to start studying the JCAM. What parts of this should I look at to protect, to make sure I take care of our CCAs? And they're like, ah, who cares? They're CCAs. They're going to get shit on. And man, that's so wrong. Yeah, exactly. And so anyway.
That's the opposite of the attitude we should have. I mean,
exactly.
I go to a lot of care academies and I tell them, look, the great thing about having a union is we're a fraternal organization. Mm-hmm. And if you have a problem, I have a problem. We all have a problem. The other great thing about the fraternal organization is these are all your brothers and sisters. So they've all been through what you're through, what you're going through. You're out there on the route. You're all alone, especially when you're brand new and you're learning the ropes. You're unfamiliar with the route. You don't know what the hell's going on out there. There's crazy people. There's dogs. There's all type of hazards.
Yeah.
You are not alone. You have a whole network of people, not only in your facility, but outside of your facility and all across the nation, of people that are going to help you to succeed.
Right.
And that has to be our message, not just at the Carrier Academy, but all throughout, you know, contractually, you know, as far as involvement with the union, as far as every single thing that we do, we need to bring these people, these new carriers, into the fold. We have to.
Right. Absolutely. They're the future of the Postal Service. We're relying on them to fill these vacancies, to end our mandating problem. We'll talk about mandating in just a second. But with old-time carriers, that I see two general attitudes. One is that I got shit on when I was coming up. I got abused when I was a PTF or when I first started, and that's just the way it is, and you're going to get abused too. The other attitude is I got abused when I came up, and I don't want that for you. I want better for you. So where do you weigh in on that?
Well, I think the first position is preposterous because, first of all, you were paid a lot more money to be
The truth.
When you came in.
Hey, no question.
It makes it go over a whole lot easier when you're making what would be equivalent to $30 an hour today versus $20 an hour and limited benefits and all of that. So that mentality makes no sense. But I think to the extent that people can honestly say they had a rough go in the beginning, like I said, we're a fraternal organization. I don't want my brother or my sister, no more than, look, if we all got kids, you know, like just because you might have suffered as a kid doesn't mean you want your kids to suffer. That just makes no sense
exactly.
In a family type environment. So, you know, we're all family and hopefully the next generation of carers will have it better than we had it. Not worse for
right.
sure.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so speaking of having it better, and one of the biggest sources of distress for carriers is Article 8, you know, and being mandated, the mandatory overtime. So you talk a little bit about this in your platform. Obviously, something has to give. And you were getting substantial escalated remedies, it sounded like, in Region 3. So what's the plan? You know, we have to deal with the contract as we have it now. Obviously, if you get elected, you can work on fixing some of this stuff. But what is the plan for a potential CARF administration to fix this mandatory overtime problem?
Well, I think it's a postal service problem as well as a letter carrier problem. And for the postal service, you look at what are they losing? They're losing a lot of things. They're paying overtime rate, penalty overtime rate. They're paying what's now the super penalty overtime
rate,
you know, double time and a half. They're also not able to retain employees because it's completely unreasonable in today's workforce to tell someone that they just have to be available all the time. And even when you specifically say, I do not want overtime, and I've made it to the status of a full-time regular, I came up with this term. We got a lot of members that conjure up a 8-hour, 40-hour restriction.
Yeah, no question.
And it's like, hey, any doctor in America is going to tell you it's healthier for you just to work 8 hours and 40.
Yes, exactly.
Versus killing yourself out there, you know, 60 hours a week. So it's not a stretch medical-wise, but why should someone have to go through that? And then you look at the contractual stuff and you say, okay, if you get into a contractual debate with the Postal Service. And so before we started the last round of contract negotiations, I wanted to insist that this be one of the issues we tell the Postal Service, look, you're either going to work with us to fix this problem, or we're going to make sure that an arbitrator fixes this problem one way or another, right? If you're going to be unreasonable, you're going to, you know, put your head in the sand and say, we're not giving you guys nothing, then we're going to have to take that to an arbitrator. But let's be reasonable here. Look at it from the point of view of how can it be better for you? Better retention rate, spending less money on overtime and penalty overtime. And I think what you set up is you say, okay, the rural carriers already have it in their contract. Rural carriers, they don't.
You mentioned that in your platform, but you don't say in there what it is that the rural carriers have. What is it that they have?
Their language, and I used to know exactly what provision it was.
Just generally, it's fine.
I'm going to go back and put it in the platform because we should know what provision it is. But what it says basically is you're a regular rural carrier. You're never responsible for that other route or your route on an NS day. That's
gotcha.
Not your responsibility. I mean, think about it logically. The Postal Service has the universal right to do staffing under Article 3. We give them that right under the contract.
Right.
They have that obligation. And then when they fail at that obligation, somehow it becomes my fault. I'm on Route 6.
That's my single favorite thing that I read in your platform yesterday. I was just looking for it.
It's infuriating.
Yeah, they blow it. They fail in Article 3, and then we have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So I think you set up something contractually. Say, look, go through the steps. You have to utilize the ODL. Obviously, that's already in there.
Right.
You have to utilize the auxiliary workforce. That's not in there.
Right.
You have to take volunteers. That's not in there. I mean, sometimes, look, if I'm not on the list, it doesn't mean I can't work overtime ever. It just means I don't want to make that commitment.
Right.
But on a particular day, depending what kind of work it is, you know, I might like that route or whatever,
right.
You know. So force them to ask for volunteers, force them to, you know, utilize the auxiliary workforce, obviously maximize the people on the ODL. We could even add in even up into including volunteering if they want to work past 12 and 60, because that's not in there right now.
And these go ahead.
Continue. And the fourth thing would be they have to utilize ODL carriers in another office in the commuting area, particularly on an NS day. You know, that mandating on an NS day, look, go find That's somebody else that wants the overtime. Right. That is completely unreasonable. And maybe there'll be a limit on a regular day. Say, okay, they got to go within maybe 20 minutes. But a lot of these stations, there's stations within 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Or other offices within 20 minutes. At least make them make that effort. And then if all that fails, that tells you that you have a staffing issue. And then you go to the requirements under staffing and not just give them carte blanche under Article 3. Say, okay, you know,
they you have an to obligation. It's not just a right to hire. They have an obligation to hire.
Yes, yeah. I agree. Yeah. They should have to maintain a certain complement.
Right. So with your idea of drawing from other stations for the ODL, Fred Woodley of Delivering Solidarity, he actually has that in at least one of the local agreements that he negotiated where they have like an installation-wide ODL and you can draw from nearby nearby offices.
Yeah, he's not the only one, especially when you have installations where they might have separate ODLs. Let's say there's three stations in the installation and they have a separate ODL, but they might have language that says before you mandate, go to ask for volunteers from the ODLs and the other stations before you mandate someone. Look, it just should not be somebody that there's people out. I mean, a lot of our people like making money, especially with the wages not being what we want them to be. I'm not getting in the way of nobody trying to make any money. Have at it. But we do have a significant number of members, and they're just going to quit if you don't accommodate them because they're like, they want to have a life. You know, God bless them. To have a life, and they should be able to do that.
Right. As a steward, I've had to go to my supervisors and the station manager and ask them, look, you have a choice with this employee. You can work them 40 hours a week, maybe a little bit more, or you can work them 0 hours a week because they're going to quit. And that's going to be worse for all of us.
I mean, we look at the NERP, right?
Right.
And we say, you're not going to be able to retain employees if you work the hell out of them. Why is it okay to work the hell out of a regular carrier who's earned that right, who's not on the ODL? That just makes no sense. So, like I say, we're going to be able to accomplish something with an arbitrator, something. But I would much rather sit down with the Postal Service and say, look, we have a problem. Let's figure this thing out together. So hopefully that'll be what will happen.
And the problem is, you know, to put it in simple terms, the people who want the overtime, I mean, that's why we have the contract set up the way it is. So the people who want the overtime get it, and the ones who don't get it. And management can't seem to figure it out. It's unbelievable. Yep. Yeah. All right. Obviously, I'm with you on that one. So let's talk about one of the things that frustrated me to no end when I got fired from the Carrier Academy, the alternative dispute resolution process. So from my perspective, my business agent, you know, at the Academy, you know this because you're a business agent. The business agent has to deal with management to resolve Academy issues. And because there's no teeth in it, from my perspective, it was like, okay, this is obviously set up so that like the adults get together in the room and work this out. And it's a nice, simple, straightforward process. But then I ran into the problem that, well, the post office management side doesn't have adults that are willing to go into the room and talk about this. And so we're just stuck. We have no other recourse. So what's your experience with the ADR and what would you like to see going forward?
Well, first of all, there's different ADRs. Generally, I don't like any of them because you have an Article 15 dispute resolution process. You have a grievance procedure that obviously we fought. I mean, the Postal Service, if it was up to the Postal Service, we wouldn't have any grievance procedure whatsoever. It would say the Postal Service is the employer. If you don't like what they're doing, get a new job. You know what I mean?
Right.
It left up to them. That's the language they would like. So we have this language in Article 15 that requires them to meet with us, whenever we have a dispute. And then we set up a process outside of what we've forced them to agree to in Article 15. And I just think that's never in our interest. I don't see how it's in not even a single time it's in our interest. And ironically, the new language in the NERP is grievable. And so why can't the language in, say, the memorandum that talks about training, why can't that be grievable? Why can't it say that when you have a new carrier and you hired a new carrier, day one is going to be onboarding orientation. Day two and three is going to be driver's training. Day four is going to be a shadow day.
Right.
Then the following week, they're going to go to the Carrier Academy. And then the following week, they're going to go with the OJI. And they will be paid this number of hours, whether that shit takes place or not, right? Just write that into the contract.
Right.
Here's the process. Here's how it's going to go. And the carrier is going to get paid these hours. Now, if the Postal Service doesn't do their job, they don't have slots available, whatever, that doesn't mean that the new carrier's got to sit at home or they send them out there to deliver mail without the training. That means that the Postal Service has made a commitment as soon as they hired that person, and we get that in writing, and it's grievable. Why right. shouldn't everything be grievable? Everything's a joint process. In other words, we agree jointly on how we're going to do this thing. The training process is joint. The grievance process is joint. Management's supposed to meet with you on a grievance, right? It's a joint process.
Right.
But if they don't meet with you, you can file a grievance that they didn't meet with you. You can file grievances anytime management doesn't just supposed to do because they've made that commitment. So I wouldn't agree to any process that doesn't allow us to grieve it when the Postal Service doesn't do what they're required to do under whatever agreement we have.
Right.
It has to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously that's true. And that's also like in Article 19 that specifically says like these other, you know, handbooks and stuff are all part of our agreement. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
That's the thing. I mean, if the Postal Service has something in a handbook or manual, it's already been accepted as law. If they want to make a change, we can file a grievance that the change is not fair to us or it violates some term of our contract.
Right.
If we enter into a memorandum that we agree to, but then it doesn't allow us to grieve it through the Article 15 process, we've allowed management essentially to change the way they're going to give them carte blanche authority to do it in the way that they see fit. And
that's exactly what happened.
If they're going to do it in the way they see fit, let them do it by them, you know, let them do it and we should file a grievance on it.
Right, right. So yeah, a good example of that is like my academy issue where once I got my hands on the manuals that govern the academy, I said, oh, our carriers are getting screwed here. We're not getting nearly the resources we're supposed to get. You know, all this stuff's laid out in the manual. And then when I bring it like, hey, I want to file a grievance on this. Oh, we can't grieve that because that's part of this alternative process. And it's madness. Okay, so something that I read in your platform that made me nervous at first was you say, I'm going to work together with the business agents to evaluate all of our appointed union reps and make sure they have the skills and that they're on board and all this stuff. And as soon as I start reading that, I think about the good old boy network and the corruption, and I'm only going to have in the people that I like. But then you go on, to your credit, to say the exact opposite, that look, this is not going to be the good old boy system. This is going to be merit-based, and I don't care about whether I agree with you on a personal level. You know, I want the best people in for the job. And obviously, you see it as much as anybody, the good old boy network and the cronyism and the gatekeeping and the blackballing that goes on within our union. And you mention a specific person who you ran against for business agent, and now you guys get along well. So first, I'd like you to tell my listeners a little bit about that relationship. And then second, what you view as the solution to the gatekeeping and the blackballing.
Yeah, that's a good question. So when I ran for business agent, the first time was in 2014. And I ran what you would call against the ticket. In other words, Fred Rolando was running for president. He had 27 other people that he was endorsing for their positions, including the person was running in Region 3 was Tony Hudson running for business agent. So I win the election and Fred calls me and he says, congratulations, brother. You know, you won. And he said, but Tony's going to be working in the office with you. I said, okay. I mean, the president and that's the look, we may want to change the Constitution. But right now, the way it's worded, the president makes a lot of appointments. We don't always elect the people.
Right.
And that's one thing that's up to the members of the union. I can only tell you what I'm going to do if I'm the president as far as filling those appointments. But if you decide, you say the people that work in a regional office should be elected as well by the membership, I'm fine with that. You know, whatever the members of the union want to do, you would change the Constitution to reflect that. But the way it's written now, you elect the business agent, the president appoints everybody else. And so, you know, I sat down with Tony, we had a little meeting. We had a couple of things that we had to air out, you know?
Sure.
Hey man, I didn't care for the way you did this during the campaign.
Right.
And he had a couple of things he didn't care for, you know, things I did. And hey, at the end of the meeting, we're brothers, We got a job to do in serving the members here in Region 3. We let all that stuff go. And I can tell you, honestly, you can ask anybody in Region 3. I never cared. As soon as that election was over, you know, you what you see sometimes, and President Renfro did this, and I believe it was a huge mistake. When he got elected president, the first thing that one of the first things he did, very first things, was he fired two RAAs, one in Region 9 and one in Region 1,
yeah,
for completely for political reasons.
Right.
This I know person the story decided about the region to run one, in the yeah. election. That is not a reason to make any decision on how you're going to fill a position for political reasons. One, because the Constitution says any member has the right to run.
Right.
You know, don't take away the member's right to run, and don't take away the member's right to choose who they want by allowing any member, you know, to run. So I didn't agree with that. But you can ask anyone in Region 3. I never cared. Still to this day, did you endorse me? Did you vote? Hell, I don't know how you voted anyway.
Right.
People say they voted for you. It's a secret ballot.
Right.
You're probably telling both people you voted for them. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
But that stuff never mattered to me. I'm always, you know, on the lookout for talented people, passionate people, people that want to help out their brothers and sisters. And my job is to find a role for you that fits. So when I put that language in the platform, that's what I'm looking at nationwide. You know, are you in the right location? Are you in the right job? Are you working on the things that are, you know, you're most good at as far as serving human? And then you also want to look at what is the overall makeup of that regional office? Is that office diverse? Is that office, do they have people in that office that can do a bunch of different things, which are the needs of the members in that region? And then the other thing you got to do is have a conversation with each one of those people. If I'm making the appointment, I'm having a conversation with them. So another part of the platform gets into us being a union of letter carriers, mm-hmm. not being a union of union act,
yes.
union people,
right.
You know, union of letters. So how do we do that? Well, one of the ways we can do that is by the president of the union appointing people regularly that come directly from carrying their route. And or people that are making a commitment, because I'm going to ask people, you know, you're applying for this job, or you want to work in this regional office or here at headquarters on this position or whatever. How often do you plan on carrying your route once we make this appointment? And if they say, well, I'm never going to carry my route, I might say, okay, that'll work for us for maybe a year or two, but that right. ain't going to work for us for 10 years.
Right.
That's, you know, we're not going to have a 10-year program where you're not carrying your route and you're slowly but surely getting separated from the workroom floor.
Exactly.
That's not going to work for me.
And
on the other hand,
go ahead. Oh, when people get into these offices, they get very comfortable. You know, it's yes. really nice to have your lunch at a desk and to be in an air conditioned yes. office. And you get this problem where the priority becomes just holding on to that office. That whatever yeah. you do, you know, I can't rock the boat. I can't speak up. I can't whatever, because I'm worried that I'm going to have to go back and sit in an LOV.
Yeah. If anyone that works for the union is ever concerned that they might have to go back and carry mail, like if that's their concern,
right?
I don't want them working for us.
That's, I feel you know,
Mike. That's not the person that we want. I'm sorry.
Yep.
I was going to say on the flip hand, I truly believe, and some of the members don't appreciate this enough, and some of the members just haven't had enough experience to see this and know this, but man, we have so many very talented, passionate people, like, and I love our people. I'm not against anybody. So I don't plan to come in and, you know, clean shop and fire everyone. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to come in and have these conversations with everyone, figure out, you know, where's the best place for them? How can they best serve the union? What is their plans 1 year, 2 years, 5 years down the road? And then as there's vacancies, I'm going to fill them in the way that I just mentioned. So
yeah, I like it. That sounds good. Okay. Let me get one last topic in, before we get out of here, and I'll let you also, you know, have some time at the end to sell yourself. But God damn it, I did the intro and then I forgot what the issue was. all right, skip it then. We've already talked about tons of stuff. So tell my listeners, look, I'm sure my listeners are enthusiastic about you in the way that I am. Like, I love that you bring this energy. I love that you're thorough, that you have this good platform. And so if people want to support you, what should they do? Where should they go? What can they do?
All right, awesome. So, in closing on the platform, and maybe was one of the things you wanted to bring up and forgot, but
Maybe.
if you go at the front of the thing, there's a table of contents, and I'll just read the table of contents just quickly. National contract, future of the Postal Service, grievance process, joint processes, contract enforcement, training, union structure and collaboration, member services, organizing, legislation, stamp out hunger, safety on the street, and then a conclusion. So, you don't have to read it all at once. Maybe break it down into pieces, whatever might interest you, that kind of thing. So, and we'll try to do a better job of sharing aspects of the platform as we go forward, in small pieces, maybe in different formats and things like that. Have to think about what's the best way to do that. As far as the campaign, we happen to be in the middle of a nationwide raffle where it's a big fundraiser going on. So if you go to the website, Caref, Caref, four, the number four, Prez.org, there's a bunch of tabs up there. One of them will take you to the nationwide raffle. Matter of fact, the homepage is the nationwide raffle right now. You go on there. It is a ranked choice voting raffle. That's another thing we're going to be promoting is the ranked choice voting system. I like it. We'll talk about that in some future episode. But you have four major prizes, so you can kind of rank which ones you want. Just like a bid, you say, I want Route 6, then I want Route 7 and Route 14 or whatever. You put them in the order of your preference. But we're hoping this is going to be a major fundraiser. If you can help sell tickets, so we're expecting this back pay next Friday. Finally, we got a little money in our pocket. We are not trying to take all your money. I will donate all of my back pay because not that much. It's not that much. But I'll see how much mine will be. Anyway, I'll donate all my back pay to the campaign. But we're not asking anyone to do that. But we are asking you guys $20. If you want to make a donation, you can make a $20.26 $0.26 donation for 2026. But the better way to do it is get a raffle ticket or get a few raffle tickets. You can get they're $5, they're five for $20. If you're willing to sell some at your station with your co-workers, your brothers and sisters, your fellow carriers, that would help the campaign out a lot. We're really looking for volunteers. There's a place you can go in there and volunteer, or you can send an email to the campaign. Carefortprez@gmail.com is easy access to the campaign. You can go on the website and fill in the contact form. You can click on the link that says help volunteer for the campaign. However you want to do it, it seems like everyone has my cell phone number, so that's another way you can do it. But let us know you're willing to help us out. We'll ship you the physical tickets so you'll have them. And you can go around hopefully and help raise some money. But that's a big thing. It's going to be, we're going to pull the tickets on September the 15th. And that's a big thing going on right now. We also have prizes, including these caps.
Oh,
which you
yeah,
can't
Mike's wearing a
see.
sharp hat that you can't see.
There you go. I'm glad you helped me out on that one.
No
Because once
problem.
again, I'm looking at the camera, not realizing this is audio. But there's different prizes for the people that are helping to sell the tickets. And like I said, you can also go and purchase raffle tickets through the website. Zelle, Apple Pay, PayPal. I think they take every form of payment, known to man. So
Right on.
anyway, that's what we're up to.
I remembered, Mike, what the last thing was I wanted to ask you
Ah, what
about.
you
The
got?
grievance backlog. So
Yes.
to set it
Huge
up just
problem.
yes, to set it up just a little bit, if you listen to David Noble, he says, when I get in, I would just tell Renfro that we're hiring 30 more arbitrators and that's that. Is it that simple? Is it just an issue of the getting the post office to agree? What's going on?
Yeah, it's not nearly that simple, in my opinion. I know Brother Noble had some experience in that, and in that realm, but that was back in like the
Right, it was a
80s
long
or
time
something.
ago, yeah.
So I don't, it doesn't work that way anymore. But maybe we're just not doing it right. I'm not dismissing what he's saying. I do appreciate him identifying the problem. If it was left up to the Postal Service, there wouldn't be a grievance procedure.
That's
So
right.
we have to set up what unfortunately happened is we had a memorandum 1939 that President Renfro let lapse. It was set to expire with the termination of the last contract. And so once we got a new contract, March 21st of this year, memorandum 1939 expired. And what it had in there was requirements for the Postal Service to either settle a grievance or take something to arbitration within a time frame. And by having that, you force the Postal Service to hire more arbitrators, do more arbitration days. You force them to do something because, like I said, left to their own volition, they don't want to do anything. And so now that that memorandum is not there, I think we need some type of language that requires them to do something. Quite frankly, we probably need an overhaul of the entire grievance procedure. We overhauled it in like 1999, and I think it worked great for us for a lot of years, but the Postal Service has really checked out of the process, and so we can hold them accountable to the language that we have right now. We can do a much better job of that, including filing national grievances, which we got that motion passed at the last convention
right.
In 2024 that they would file a national grievance when there's a need to activate backup DRTs, and the Postal Service refuses to do it, even though they have people available. They just don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, it's not in their interest. Exactly as you put it. Yeah, they wouldn't do the grievance process at all if they could get away with it.
Exactly. So, but I do think we need some type of language, some type of structure that makes sense, but also is something that forces them to hear an issue. The only leverage that we have in the regional office, like right now we have hundreds of grievances, and most of the regional offices have a backlog of grievances either at the office or at the DRT or both. And when you have that backlog, the only leverage that you have is, okay, let's arbitrate this issue. Right. And then miraculously, they want to come to the table and talk about a proper resolution of the matter. And it's like, damn, you could have done this at informal A.
Right.
You could have done this at formal A. You could have done this at step B.
Right.
But, arbitration, at the end of the day, we have to be willing to go to arbitration to enforce the terms of the contract because the regular dispute resolution process doesn't work. Step B used to be that backstop. You know, Vice President James Henry talks about that a lot, how the DRT, the Step B, is the backstop. It makes sure that the Postal Service is acting right at informal A and formal A, because if they don't, Step B is going to resolve the issue and going to resolve the issue in a way that you're not going to like. So it's much better if you resolve it yourself at inform and formulate. But now that that doesn't work, you really have to have a backstop at arbitration, or your grievances just sit there, which is what we're seeing now, man.
Right.
We're seeing, I got removals that are just sitting there. And I feel terrible for the carriers are calling me like, what's going on with my grievance? And, I had to go get another job, or I'm trying to get another job, right. Or, what does my future look like? And I'm like, shit, I don't know. I mean, at least they're due a result, right? Win, and, lose, or draw. Let's get it on.
Even if we win that grievance, there's like no way to actually make that carrier whole. To go back and pay their rent for them and to make it where they didn't get kicked out of their apartment and they didn't lose their car and all that stuff.
Their girlfriend probably left them. It's
exactly.
Rough, man.
That's it.
You can't get that back.
All right. Mike, thank you very much for coming on. I'm always pleased to talk to you. You got a really good handle on these issues, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to my listeners. And again, if you guys want to support Michael, if you're interested in what he has to say, it's cariff4prez.org. Check that stuff out. And thank you everybody for listening. For Mike Cariff, I'm Alan Gygax. I will catch you all next time.